Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Melanie, and I'm reading the Big Bend Sentinel on December 17th, 2020. Those are the things we've lost. As holidays approach, locals mourn Big Bend residents lost to COVID. By Stephen Paulson, Tri-County. He was the pillar of the Alpine community, a master phone line repairman, a bail bondsman so generous that he often lost money on clients. But to four boys growing up in Alpine in the 70s and 80s, Joe Magoo Torres was just dad. His favorite hobby was his family, said his son Joe, Jojo Torres. And of course, my mom was the best friend he ever had. Magoo was close to his father, Horacio, and when the boys were young, they would pile into the back of Horacio's baby blue pickup for a drive down to Lajitas. They foraged for cactus roots and fished in the Rio Grande. We were as tight as could be, Jojo said. A woven family. Magoo was a hard worker, and as his boys got older, the family moved from a one-room trailer to a three-room trailer, and finally to a brick home on the west side of Alpine. Eventually, his sons had children of their own, and Magoo grew close to them. He took them across the state to visit amusement parks. He took his grandson, Zane, who lived in Beaumont, to see Galveston Island. When Magoo retired from Southwestern Bell AT&T in the early 2000s, he stayed busy, throwing himself into other projects. He opened Magoo's Place, a casual Tex-Mex eatery with his wife, Marta. He started a bail bonds company, helping criminal defendants get back on their feet and making sure they made it to court. I wouldn't say he was a star, because he was so humble, Jojo reflected in a phone call last week from Odessa. He let his work speak for itself. He never bragged and boasted about anything. In late September, around a month of illness, Magoo died of COVID. It was the fifth COVID death in Brewster County, the 12th in the Tri-County, and roughly the 200,000th in the United States. Around 100,000 more Americans have died of coronavirus since then, including at least eight more Big Bend residents. As temperatures drop and Christmas approaches, experts warn the pandemic could get even worse as people travel across the country to see family and gather inside for celebrations. But for some families in the region, the struggle is different as they head toward Christmas with a family member missing. One of the closest connections we had every year was when we had Christmas, Presidio native Vicky Carrasco said of her big brother Elias, of whom she lost last week. If he wasn't there, it just felt like we were waiting for someone. Even after Magoo was hospitalized, he kept up with his work, Jojo said. He was literally working until the moment he was intubated, she said, calling clients, texting clients, making sure they were on their court cases. Magoo was 69 and had diabetes, factors that some might use to excuse or explain away his death. But his family said he was full of life. His death certificate listed COVID as the primary cause of death. In a heartfelt media post in October, Magoo's daughter-in-law, Daniela Martinez, reflected on what Magoo had meant to her son Zane and his grandson. Man, what a team they were, she wrote. I've never hurt so much in my life. Seeing him in more pain than he's ever known, pain that I can't heal, pain that can't be fixed. Magoo's son Victor, a veteran, still lives in a trailer at his family's home. One of the reasons he moved my trailer here, Victor explained, is because he always wanted to know I was okay and what I was doing. Victor sat outside his trailer one afternoon last weekend. Tears broke through his tough demeanor. I got to talk to him and then he was gone, he said. Life happens so fast. Life isn't fair. In Alpine, the city issued a proclamation in October declaring a Joe Magoo Torres Week. The city did so, Mayor Andy Ramos explained in the document, because Magoo served in several public roles, had a profound impact on Alpine residents, and always demonstrated compassion and concern for all members of the community. In a statement to the Big Bend Sentinel, Judge Roy Ferguson called Magoo a good human being and an irreplaceable part of the Big Bend criminal justice system. I was lucky to be his friend, Ferguson added. He is truly missed and will never be forgotten. James McDermott, a public defender in Alpine, broke down as he explained why Magoo was loved in the local court system. Magoo was a bail bondsman, a job that involves billing people accused of crimes in exchange for their freedom. It doesn't always attract the most caring of souls. Magoo was an exception, McDermott said. He extended lines of credit to defendants, an act of generosity that's virtually unheard of in the industry. He fed and clothed his clients, found them hotel rooms, and made sure they made it to court. He was the best bonds person that I've worked with in the entire state. Joe Greer Denham III, a funeral director at Alpine Funeral Home, said he's handled several funerals for COVID victims. Alpine was having around 30% more funerals. In Van Horn, where he also works, they're up around 50%. Those include not only COVID deaths, but normal deaths from despair, which typically spike during the holiday season. COVID funerals could be harder, Denham said, because families didn't get to touch their loved ones. But at least they got to see them. They come in and you see this relief on their faces, he said. Asked what advice he had for the families of COVID victims, Denham sighed. He took a long pause. During the grieving process, they need to reach out to family, friends, and whatever higher being they believe in, he said. If they just close themselves off and retreat inward while they think that might help them, it won't. Growing up in Presidio, Vicky Carrasco viewed her older brother Elias almost like a father. He was 22 years older than her. When their father died, he helped the family take care of their mother. He tended to the family ranch in Mexico, caring for goats, building pads, and exploring the mountains. Last week, Carrasco got a frantic call from her relatives in Odessa. Elias, 62, was really sick. He was taken to the hospital in an ambulance and died later that night. It was very quick, Vicky said. It was a complete shock to all of us. Elias died of a heart attack, but with morgues facing shortages and backlogs, the Carrascos haven't received a death certificate that can confirm whether Elias died of COVID. They know he was around people who later tested positive for coronavirus after both his son Elias Jr. and a co-worker got sick. At press time, Elias Jr. was in the same hospital. The family stressed that the sudden death of a loved one, not the specifics of how he died, is what matters right now. They urged residents to continue taking coronavirus precautions, especially during the grieving process when family members might be tempted to get together. When Elias was younger, he worked at the family ranch in Mexico. Later, he owned and managed it. It was his passion in life, Vicky said, exploring and caring for the land. He avoided plants he thought were beautiful when he cleared new paths. Those are the things we've lost now, she said. A few years ago, the family got together at the ranch. Elias told them about a place called Pancho Villa Canyon. Vicky hadn't heard of it before. They drove into the mountains. They hiked along a narrow cliff trail. It was very scary for me, but I thought, if he's doing it, I'd better do it, Vicky said. That's always how it was. When they reached their destination, Vicky was stunned. It was a beautiful landscape of swimming holes with creeks flowing between them. In Odessa, Magoo spent 17 days in the hospital before he died. When the doctors decided to intubate him, JoJo thinks his father knew his time was up. Some of his last words were, "That's it. I'm done, Jack," JoJo said. The family sent him encouraging messages through safety glass. On the day before he died, JoJo suited up in protective gear and spent the day in his father's room, holding his hand. Workers finally kicked him out. JoJo spent the night awake in the parking garage, watching his father through the big glass hospital windows. A little after 4 a.m., JoJo drifted to sleep. He thought he woke to feel a tug on his shirt. "When I looked, my dad was sitting right beside me," he recalled. He said, "Take me home, son," he said. "Hurry up and take me home before they come and get me again." "My father taught me everything," he recalled, his voice breaking. "He taught me how to love, how to be a good father, how to be a charitable person. But the one thing he never taught me was how to cry. I learned that the day he passed away." Magoo loved golf, gambling, and fishing. He loved bologna sandwiches with jalapenos, which only his wife Marta could make right. He was known for his Magooisms, which were his tics, malapropisms, and unique turns of phrase. "Comb your face and wash your hair," JoJo said, laughing as he remembered one of those Magooisms. We'd always joke with him, "Dad, did you brush your face and wash your hair?" He'd tell us to shut up. Sometimes advice was couched in metaphors about golf. "If you don't get the ball to the hole, it'll never go in," JoJo recalled. "It doesn't matter how you play, so long as you look good," Victor, another son, thought of Magooisms as specific actions that made his father who he was. Like the way he would bounce his leg instinctively, or how he'd fall asleep suddenly in those moments where he finally allowed himself a break from work. The rebel of the family, Victor, has drifted apart from some of his relatives as he's gotten older. "But he was close to his father until the end," he said. Magoo hated Victor's rap music, but he'd still sit front row when Victor had a show. "Victor was the favorite," JoJo said. "There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it." "He did a damn good job of taking care of us boys," Victor said. "There ain't no amount of money that could buy the knowledge he's given me." He remembered how worried his father was when he joined the military and how his father brought him to the airport to say goodbye. "My dad's always been, for lack of a better term, the mother hen," he explained. As the plane rose that day, Victor could see his father standing there until he was just a speck on the ground. On a recent afternoon, Victor went to his father's grave with his dog, Lucius. "He's been visiting every day," he said. "Just talk to him and thank him for everything he's done for me." He pulled into the Holy Angel Cemetery and stopped at a small plaque. He set up a speaker. He got a bag of golf balls from his car, and he cut free a golf driver he'd zipped tied to a wreath by the grave. Victor put on one of his dad's favorites, "El Coco Rayado" by Ruben Vela. He whacked the golf balls, sending them flying off towards the Del Norte and Glass Mountains. He was 69. Victor said, "I thought he was going to live to be 140. I thought he had at least 20 years left in him." Virtually tour the Ruidoso Church and help fund its restoration by Abby Perot. Ruidoso. Guests from far and wide are invited to the remote border town of Ruidoso on Friday for an intimate exploration inside the adobe church that once housed the Sacred Heart of Jesus Catholic Church. And because of the coronavirus, instead of joining in person, attendees will tour the historic structure with experts virtually on social media from the comfort of their couch. Friends of the Ruidoso Church, a nonprofit set to restore the adobe structure, are using the virtual event to reintroduce people to the building and begin fundraising for the planning phase of the restoration. "We need to take some time before we start putting shovels in the ground to do the research and planning," said Mike Green, a volunteer with the organization who has a background in architectural restoration. The group has a goal of raising over $50,000 to fund a site analysis by an adobe expert and hire a structural engineer that can assess what types of shoring or bracing the building may need to continue standing proud in the border town. "There's a lot of careful planning that needs to take place before we start getting dirty down there. So that's what we need to fund, or a portion of it." Once the site is safe, they intend to fund a historic structure report, a detailed study of the site's history and archaeology. They will also assemble historic accounts of the building and are hoping to speak with anyone who experienced the building when it was still functioning as a Catholic church. Join the virtual tour on December 18th throughout the day on social media platforms at Ruidoso Church on Instagram and Friends of the Ruidoso Church on Facebook, and contact them to share your stories about the building. Donations can be made at www.ruidosachurch.org. Students learn the art of the monologue with Marfa Live Arts by J.D. Garcia. Marfa. Marfa Live Arts' fifth annual playwriting preparatory workshop is currently in progress at Marfa Junior High. This week, all 7th and 8th grade students are working on developing monologues under the guidance of Marfa Live Arts Director Jenny Lynn Hamilton. The workshop will culminate with 10 students' works being performed by professional actors at next Thursday's Virtual Magic and Monologues Showcase, which will include a special performance by Mexican magician Mago Crypto. The workshop, which was enacted by Marfa Lights Arts, with the encouragement of former Marfa Independent School District Superintendent Andrew Peters in 2015, has served to prepare Marfa students for Marfa Live Arts' annual playwriting program by guiding students through a three-part series consisting of relaxation techniques, observation exercises, and a writing studio. The program is designed to get students to a place where they feel relaxed, inspired, and ready to write. It was developed to help students process difficult emotions as well as to access and express their deepest hopes and dreams. Hamilton said of the program, she added that since the inception of the Playwriting Prep Workshop, students that have gone on to participate in the high school playwriting program show a newfound enthusiasm and a better sense of the writing process. The students definitely are more prepared and have a higher level of self-confidence in their writing ability and in their ability to access their inner voice. The relaxation techniques portion of the workshop, Hamilton explained, consists of helping students relax through breath work and body movement techniques designed to release stress and tension. As a result of a relaxed mind and body, students can better focus on their writing and on unlocking new doors to ideas and creativity. The observation exercises section of the program, she continued, is designed to assist the students in finding their inner voice utilizing their five senses and, as Hamilton explained, get them out of their analytical mind. The final part of the workshop, the writing studio, gets the students to put pen to paper through prompts and other assignments. The writing studio gives students the freedom and opportunity to create a body of work that is unique to them and to share this work with others. Everything they write is from their own world, their own families, and their own imaginations, Hamilton said. We start with monologues because it teaches dramatic form and character study. The kids learn about backstory, conflict, and problem solving. These are all things that will help with their papers throughout their education, no matter what the subject. Writing well and being able to express oneself are skills that serve everyone. Students whose work is presented will also be awarded prizes. A selection of the works will be performed by the actors at the Magic and Monologue Showcase via Zoom next week, Thursday, December 17th at 7 p.m. The community is invited to attend. Visit marthalivearts.org and follow the Zoom link for free registration and tickets. Marfa Council to Terminate Contract with Company that Enforces Short-Term Rental Rules by Stephen Paulson, Marfa. As Marfa City officials move forward with the proposed short-term rental ordinance, they're cutting ties with one company that promises to help governments enforce such rules. At a city council meeting on Tuesday, council voted unanimously to end its contract with Host Compliance. While Marfa City officials hope to better regulate local vacation rental market, they said Host Compliance's focus seemed to be on larger cities and that the ongoing coronavirus pandemic was upending the contractual relationship. As City Attorney Teresa Todd explained, there were times we reached out and we just didn't get responses. When asked about these criticisms, a spokesperson for the Host Compliance said in an email that while they were disappointed that our partnership with the City of Marfa is coming to an end, they wished the city the very best. Ensuring that our customers had the support they needed to be successful is a top priority, the spokesperson added. Whenever this goal isn't met, we do everything we can to identify the problem and take the necessary steps to make it right. Marfa's roughly $21,000 contract with Host Compliance started after the company gave a presentation last December on the problems posed by unregulated rentals in town. In its 2019 presentation, a company representative promised solutions to Marfa's issues with short-term rental registration, compliance monitoring, fraud, audit and enforcement challenges, and offered services to monitor rentals to assure they were complying with existing city ordinances. The company ensured it would track the local rental markets, monitor hotel occupancy tax collection, and assist Marfa in enforcing short-term rental ordinances. But 1 year into the contract, city officials were dissatisfied with the service. Rather than working with Host Compliance, the city hopes to hire a new employee to act as a liaison with short-term rental owners and help enforce any new rules on them. We're not getting value out of this, Councilmember Buck Johnson said of the Host Compliance contract. I think COVID has been a factor. It's shaken everything up.
Alpine woman killed by law enforcement during welfare check by Stephen Paulson, Brewster County. A young Alpine woman was killed by authorities last week after a welfare check on the woman and her friend ended in deadly gunfire. That woman, 27-year-old Yvette Hernandez, leaves behind two young children. Last Wednesday around 8:30 p.m., Hernandez was in a car a few miles west of Marathon with a friend, whom authorities have not yet identified. Someone called in a welfare check to Brewster County Sheriff's Office, according to the Texas Rangers, who are now investigating the killing. The Texas Rangers declined to offer details on what prompted the welfare check. citing their active investigation. But while conducting the welfare check, the Texas Ranger said in a statement last week, a deputy noticed that Hernandez, who was in the driver's seat of the parked car, was allegedly intoxicated. What happened next is less clear. The Texas Ranger said there was not a pursuit. The deputy came upon the vehicle, a spokesperson for the Ranger said. She observed the vehicle on the side of the roadway. Then the Ranger said there was an altercation with a female deputy, who has still not been officially identified. According to the Brewster County Sheriff's Office, one shot was fired. The Texas Rangers declined to comment on how many bullets were fired, citing the active investigation. Hernandez was killed and the deputy was injured in her hand. The deputy was transported to Midland Memorial Hospital for treatment and later released. Sheriff Ronnie Dodson declined to give a status on the deputy's condition, saying this week that doctors were not yet sure if her hand would remain fully operational. Susana Gonzalez, the Justice of the Peace for Brewster County Precinct 3, declined to comment on the incident, but Gonzalez did say she had requested an autopsy report on Hernandez, the results of which are still pending. There would also likely be a toxicology report, Gonzalez said. Hernandez leaves behind little online presence, at least publicly and under her birth name. One of the only online references to her name is a 2005 obituary from the Odessa American newspaper when her mother, Terry, died. But as news of her death reached family and friends, online tributes started pouring in. It still hurts knowing it was her, one friend wrote. God bless y'all and take care. A childhood friend of Hernandez, Mary Alice Estrada, wrote on social media she was sending condolences to Hernandez's family, including to her children. My homegirl made it to heaven, she wrote in another post. The rain is falling so softly. She was mad earlier with that wind. The Big Bend Sentinel was unable to reach Hernandez's family by press time and is still working to confirm a more complete narrative of the shooting. But the basics of the account by Estrada, who said she was in contact with Hernandez and saw social media posts from her prior to the fatal shooting, matches up with unconfirmed reports from sources with knowledge of the incident. According to Estrada, Hernandez was at Spicewood in Alpine earlier that day with a friend who was later in the car with Hernandez when she died. The restaurant confirmed that Hernandez had been at Spicewood but said she was not an employee. The pair left Spicewood, later ending up at the 12-gauge restaurant in Marathon. It was there at the restaurant of the Gage Hotel where the call for a welfare check was reportedly made. It's unclear who made that welfare call or why. A manager at the Gage Hotel did not respond to a call seeking more information. But regardless, the pair later left the Gage as well. They were apparently headed back to Alpine when the shooting occurred. Hernandez was in the driver's seat. Her friend, the passenger whose identity the Big Bend Sentinel was unable to officially confirm, was released after the incident and is not expected to face charges. Hernandez, who was born and raised in Alpine, had recently moved back to Alpine after some time living in Houston. She has two daughters, who Estrada said are around 6 and 10 years old. Growing up, Estrada said Hernandez had a hard life, especially after her mother passed away. We were crazy, Estrada said. We would run the neighborhood, tagging up trash cans and stuff. But in recent years, Estrada said, Hernandez had been trying to settle down and give her daughters a better life. While Estrada said she could imagine Hernandez getting sassy with law enforcement, she couldn't imagine Hernandez escalating the situation to the point of physical conflict. We still have blanks to the story as to what exactly happened, she said. Estrada wanted to speak up about Hernandez's killing, she said, to clear her name. She said Hernandez would have done the same for her. She's not the bad person people make her out to seem, Estrada said, with her voice breaking. She wasn't like that. She was the most caring person ever.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, December 10th, 2020. Undercover Case Leads to Drug Arms Bust by Nathan Heuer, Pioneer Editor. After several months of undercover work by DPS criminal investigation agents, the agency, along with the Fort Stockton Police Department and the Pecos County Sheriff's Office, served a search warrant on a residence located at 1209 East 6th Street in Fort Stockton on Monday, December 7th at 7:30 a.m., according to Fort Stockton Police Chief Robert Lujan. Law enforcement discovered numerous drugs and firearms, including 4 grams of methamphetamine, half a pound of cocaine, 3 firearms, and a set of body armor. Johnny Blue Talavera, 31, Cassandra Guadalupe Vasquez, 33, Fernando Jonathan Ray Esqueda, III, 29, were arrested at the residence. Charges that the three face are delivery of a controlled substance, possession of a controlled substance, felon in possession of a firearm, felon in possession of body armor. Talavera and Vasquez were released shortly after the arrest on a personal recognizance bond. Esqueda was brought in on 5 charges, equaling $105,000 in bonds. Esqueda posted bail on Tuesday morning and was released from the Pecos County Jail. The possession of a controlled substance charge is $25,000. Esqueda had 3 separate charges on unlawful possession of a firearm by a felon. Each one of those charges were $20,000. The last one is unlawful possession of metal or body armor by a felon. That charge was $20,000. The DPS criminal investigation agents were originally notified of the illegal activity of Vasquez, Esqueda, and Talavera by the Fort Stockton Police Department. Fort Stockton Police Department had identified some locals doing that, so they got with the DPS CID and they made several purchases. There were DPS with Criminal Investigations Division out of the Alpine office, Lujan said. It took place over several months. PCMH receives $20,000 from Chevron. From the staff report, Chevron announced on Tuesday, December 9th, that 3 West Texas hospitals will receive $20,000 apiece in donations as the region deals with a surge in coronavirus cases. Pecos County Memorial Hospital in Fort Stockton was one of 3 hospitals that received the $20,000 donation. PCMH CEO Betsy Briscoe said the funds will be directed towards the much-awaited vaccine that will be online in the coming months. This donation will assist in purchasing supplies for administration of the vaccine to our health care workers and, when available, our community. The light at the end of the tunnel appears to be in sight, but we still have work to do. The counties in rural West Texas are at their highest levels of COVID cases since the beginning of the pandemic in March. With holiday travel and gatherings, the hospitals are preparing for the worst and are nearing capacity in COVID units. Hospitals in Reeves and Ward counties also received the $20,000 donation. The donation is one example of how Chevron is committed to supporting healthcare workers on the front lines of the pandemic while protecting its workforce. We hope this virus subsides, but in the meantime, we are grateful to be able to support these worthy hospitals by funding much-needed resources and equipment, stated Mike Milliorn, Chevron Operations Superintendent. Milliorn went on to give thanks to the first responders and healthcare workers in all 3 counties. It is the frontline healthcare workers, including those in Pecos, Reeves, and Ward counties, who are the heroes of the pandemic. Everyone at Chevron would like to thank the hospital staff for their passion and hard work, especially as the cases continue to climb in the region. COVID-19. Active cases drop below 50. PCMH has 5 hospitalizations as of December the 9th, by Nathan Heuer, Pioneer Editor. For the first time in nearly 3 weeks, COVID-19 active cases in Pecos County dropped below 50 people. On Thursday, December 2nd, COVID-19 active cases in the county declined to 48 people, marking the first time since November 21st that active case numbers have dropped below 50. That mark has maintained since December 2nd, as there were 44 cases on Friday, 46 on Monday, and 47 on Tuesday. As for hospitalizations at Pecos County Memorial Hospital, there has at least been 1 COVID-19 patient in the hospital over the past 30 days, according to CEO Betsy Briscoe. Over the past 7 days, the hospitalizations reached a low of 2 people on Wednesday at PCMH. That number has since risen to 5 people as of Wednesday, December 9th. According to Briscoe, none of those patients are in critical condition. From Wednesday to Tuesday, there have been 37 new active cases and 45 recoveries from Pecos County residents. That dropped the active cases from 55 on Tuesday to 47 on Tuesday, December 8th. The county has not had a death recorded since November 23rd. The death toll currently sits at 23 people as of Tuesday, December 8th. Since the start of the pandemic, there have been a total of 613 Pecos County residents who have tested positive, out of a total of 3,264 people tested, meaning 18.7% who were tested for the virus tested positive. There have been 143 people who reside outside of the county that have tested positive at Pecos County health care facility. There are 82 cases pending as of Tuesday. The Fort Stockton Independent School District has no active confirmed cases as of Monday, December 7th, according to Fort Stockton Assistant Superintendent Gilray Madrid. The school district's active COVID-19 case numbers peaked at 8, 5 students and 3 staff members on the FSISD report that came out November 23rd. All of those cases have since recovered, but 3 employees are still on the mend and have not returned to their jobs. Through December 7th, there's been 27 students who have recovered and 19 staff members who have recovered, putting the total number of recoveries at 46. Perkins set to take over as Pecos County Sheriff, by Nathan Heuer, Pioneer Editor. When the new year begins, there will be a new sheriff in town. Lifelong Pecos County resident T.J. Perkins will take over sheriff's duties at the Pecos County Sheriff's Office on January 1st, replacing longtime sheriff Cliff Harris. I lived here all my life. This is my community. I enjoy helping the community. I'm here for my community. That's why I never left, Perkins said. I started with the goal to become sheriff, and I've just stuck with my goal. The 1987 Fort Stockton High School graduate has worked his entire career with the Pecos Sheriff's Office, working his way through the ranks to his new position that he was elected for this past election in an uncontested race. The 52-year-old started out as county jailer in 1988 before heading to the Odessa College Law Enforcement Academy in 1991. Shortly after his graduation from the academy, he was hired as a patrol deputy. In 1999, he was promoted to sergeant, and in 2003, the Fort Stockton native took over chief deputy duties under the current sheriff, Harris, who was elected as the Pecos County Sheriff in 2001. Perkins is married to Maribel Perkins, and they have 4 kids. His current position of chief deputy will be filled by Toulon Murphy, who has been with the Pecos County Sheriff's Office 35 years. Murphy is being promoted from sergeant. Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, December 3rd, 2020. PCMH receives rapid and antigen tests. New 4-in-1 tests to be online in a few weeks. By Nathan Heuer, Pioneer Editor. Pecos County Memorial Hospital will have a limited amount of rapid COVID-19 tests and antigen tests online by the end of the week, according to PCMH CEO Betsy Briscoe. The antigen tests, which are mainly for people who think they might have come in contact with the virus but show little to no symptoms, will be able to tell if you have antibodies to the virus, meaning you have had COVID-19 in the past. The antigen test should be online by Thursday or Friday, Briscoe said on Tuesday, December 2nd. The shipment of antigen tests that PCMH received on Tuesday is the first antigen test in the hospital will have had since the start of the pandemic. The hospital will use the tests at their discretion based on symptoms due to a limited supply. What people can do is, if they think they've come in contact with COVID, this tests the antibodies, Briscoe said. That will show up if you have come in contact with it or if you've had it. And then you can make the decision from there whether to go on and do the regular COVID testing, the one that tells you for sure if you've had it. The results of the antigen test will come back in 15 to 20 minutes, and if there is a positive test for antibodies, the hospital could do a regular COVID-19 test, which usually takes 4 business days, according to Briscoe. Along with the antigen tests, the hospital also received 90 additional rapid tests that will also be used at the discretion of the hospital. PCMH has been running low on the rapid tests the past 2 weeks due to a rise in demand and a delayed shipment. The hospital will receive another additional 100 tests in a few weeks. The rapid test will be prioritized in the following order. 6 patients in the emergency room, hospital staff second, and EMTs, people with less mild symptoms. PCMH will also receive new 4-in-1 tests mid-December. The tests will detect strep throat, RSV, flu, and COVID-19 all in one test. If you have symptoms for any of the four, you will receive the test if available. More than likely, in the beginning, it will be by our discretion until we know we're going to get more supply. I guess also, if we expect you have strep, you're going to get tested for everything. COVID-19. Virus reaches community spread status in county. By Nathan Heuer, Pioneer Editor. The COVID-19 outbreak in Fort Stockton and Pecos County has reached a community spread level, according to Pecos County Judge Joe Schuster. The statement was made by the county judge in large part due to the steep rise in unknown contraction in the past few weeks. From November 24th to December 1st, there were 57 new positive tests in Pecos County, and of those 57, 32 were from people with an unknown contraction. Combine those numbers with the previous week's numbers, and there is a total of 93 new cases, 52 which were unknown contractions from November 17th to December 1st. For the last couple of weeks, the majority of the cases we've had are showing to be community spread. In other words, people do not know where they are catching it, and they have not been out of the county. So it's within our own county that they've caught the disease, and it's a community spread. The county judge added that it is time for everyone to wear a mask as the Pecos County community enters a different stage of the virus spread. The thing we need to do is the basics. People need to start wearing their masks because it is a community spread here in Fort Stockton and Pecos County. We need to act like everybody has it. The active case number in Pecos County as of December 1st was 55, 6 less than last week. Also as of December 1st, there were 2 hospitalizations in Pecos County and no new deaths reported. Hospitalizations at PCMH peaked on Thanksgiving at 6 people. The last death was on November 23rd, which grew the death total in the county to 23. Pecos County has now tested 3,162 people for COVID-19 since the start of the pandemic. A total of 2,376 tests came back negative. There are 76 tests pending and 576 tests from people who live in Pecos County since the start of the pandemic. Fort Stockton Independent School District staff and student active cases trended in the same direction as the number of unknown COVID-19 contractions in the county, according to the school weekly report on November 30th. The report showed there were 5 active cases and 3 active teacher cases in the district, the highest number combined for any given week since the start of the school year. 4 of the 5 active student cases were new, and 3 of those were from the intermediate school. He added, there were no active student cases previously before the positive tests at the intermediate campus. Outside the active cases, there have been 17 FSISD students who have recovered and 15 staff who have recovered, pushing the active and recovered combined total between students and staff to 40 people. There are 385 staff members at the Fort Stockton ISD, translating to 1 in every 21 staff members has tested positive for COVID-19. The student body positive test percentage is far less, as 1 out of every 104 students have tested positive, less than 1%. Letter to the editor. I would like to thank the City of Fort Stockton for allowing my business, West Texas Discounts, to stay open between March and the present time. Back in March, I was the first store in town to sell viral masks, toilet paper, and hand sanitizer. As a public service, our store is giving away free of charge boys and girls face shields and also free 3 feet by 5 feet thin blue line police flags, Texas and USA, to law enforcement officers. Thank you and Merry Christmas. George Soledad and Daniel Pitts, owners.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, December 10th. County now has 6 COVID-19 deaths. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. As of Wednesday morning, the number of COVID-19-related deaths in Ward County has increased to 6, based on information received from County Judge Greg Holley. But the number of active cases is declining. As of press time, there were 99 active cases, 452 total cases, and 347 recoveries. Most of the active cases, 79, have been confirmed in the last 14 days. The active case count peaked on November 26, when 205 active cases were reported. The methodology on the way COVID-19 cases is reported will change this Friday. Holley explained, quote, "The state plans to include what were earlier termed probable cases, rapid testing primarily, which seems reasonable to me. The big change, though, is that they will also include cases where there exists a combination of symptoms and a known exposure without a more likely diagnosis. In other words, cases will be included in the numbers where no positive test of any kind has been had." Quote, "I'm not happy about this change because it will only serve to confuse the public, but that's what they've decided to do. Just be aware that by the weekend, you may see numbers that look like a big spike when in fact it's just a change in the manner of reporting." Quote, "I'm not terribly confident in the numbers we get for several reasons, but it's all we have. Rather than being too concerned about the raw numbers, though, I try to keep an eye on trends over time, as well as hospitalizations. I feel that information best informs us of our local situation." End quote. Statewide, there are now 203,000 active cases, 1.2 million total cases, and 22,808 deaths. Nationwide, there is 14.3 million active cases with 287,000 deaths. CBD and vape products available in Monahans. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. CBD and vape products have been available in Monahans now for over a year. Proprietor Michael DeFranco opened Desert Vape on November 5, 2019. His shop is located at 121 and a half East Sealy, and hours are from noon until 7 p.m. Monday through Friday and 1 to 4 p.m. on Saturday. Acknowledging that his products are controversial, DeFranco described the products he sells and the steps taken to ensure quality and legal compliance. CBD products, cannabidiol, comes in several varieties, including gummies, oil, and even a CBD vape product. CBD is the oil derived from the hemp plant. Quote, "It is not marijuana, but comes from the hemp plants that are below 0.3% THC, DeFranco said. THC is the byproduct contained in marijuana that causes the euphoric sensation and is illegal in Texas and many other states. The CBD products sold by DeFranco are less than the legal limit of 0.3% of THC. Quote, "Many of the products have no traceable THC at all," he said. By comparison, marijuana can contain THC in amounts greater than 20% and is typically in the 10 to 12% range. The CBD oil offered at Desert Vape comes in bottles of 500 or 1,000 milliliters and comes with a medicine-like dropper that has graduated markings indicating the dosage amount. Quote, "The body is able to absorb and process CBD and can help with anxiety and depression. It also helps relax the body and mind and help with pain and inflammation, but it does not provide the euphoric high of marijuana. It does not impair," he said. The effects of the product vary from person to person, and DeFranco recommends new users to take the product at bedtime until it is known the effect on the user. The CBD products sell in a price range of $22 to $100. The gummies are also available in strengths of 250, 500, or 1,000 milligrams. Dosing instructions are included on every package. Quote, we even have a CBD roll-on product, like a deodorant, for direct application to help relieve pain for sore muscles and joint pain. End quote. Hemp flowers are also available. Stocked in jars, the product is sold by the gram and looks very similar to what may easily be confused with marijuana. Quote, but it is not marijuana, but dried flowers from several varieties of hemp, all of which are certified to be less than 0.3% THC. The product is registered with the Texas Department of Health, Michael said. It can be smoked like marijuana and provides a relaxing effect, but does not take away your energy and does not produce the temporary side effects of THC, such as coordination problems. DeFranco also described his vape products offered at his shop. Quote, vaping is an alternative to smoking. It can help people wean off of smoking. I personally use vaping to help me quit smoking, he said. The product comes in dozens, if not hundreds, of flavors, ranging from fruity, floral, to tobacco tastes. The vape product is an oil that is then heated in a reusable or disposable container that has a coil that heats the oil until it vaporizes, until it produces the smoke or vapor. Quote, one of the habits of smoking is the action of hand-to-mouth movement. Vaping produces that same action, he said. The vape products offered by DeFranco are highly regulated by the FDA and all have to be approved. The manufacturers provide the FDA with samples, specifications, contents of every product. Quote, in the past, there were problems with vaping causing severe lung problems, but that has been proven to be illegal products containing THC cut with vitamin E, which was highly dangerous, he explained. Everything here is all FDA approved, end quote. He acknowledges that vape products contain nicotine, which is an addictive product. Quote, but vape products do not contain as many carcinogens as tobacco products, end quote. The vape products are available in reusable or disposable packaging. The reusable product comes in 60 or 120 milliliter bottles, and prices range from $25 to $45. The containers for the reusable product range in price from $60 to $200. Replacement coils for heating the product are also available. The disposable products are sold by the number of puffs that the package contains. Prices are from $13 to $25. Customers under the age of 21 are not allowed in the shop, as regulations require being over the age of 21 to purchase products. Quote, I strictly enforce this. We sometimes have underage people try it, so we require an ID from everyone. Additionally, we have video monitoring, end quote. Michael is a native of Monahans, as are his mother and grandmother. He and wife Laura, also a Monahans native, have four children ranging in ages from 4 to 13. City hands out service and safety awards. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Mayor David Cutbirth presented 10 city employees with annual service awards and monetary stipends equal to $15 for each year of service provided. Water foreman Keith Mitchell and Jimmy Schoolcraft in the General Services Department were both recognized for 25 years of service. Landfill operator John Romo accepted an award for 10 years of service. Brandon Navarro in Production and Distribution, Philip Gonzalez in General Services Department, Stephen Lario in Production Distribution, Raymond Garcia in Wastewater Department, Joe Alvera in Streets Department, Victor Cano in Parks Department, and MEDC Director Ashley Adalto were all recognized for 5 years of service. Cutbirth said to the employees, quote, We have the best city employees anywhere in West Texas. We appreciate you very much, and the city runs as well as it does because of the work you do." End quote. Along with Cutberth, City Manager Rex Thee, and Council Members Jeppy Wilson, Richard Hawkins, Calvin Carroll, Rudy Hernandez, Ivy Valenzuela, and City Attorney Alan Nicholas were all present for the meeting. Thee presented 4 safety awards to city employees. Public Safety Safe Driver of the Year went to Xavier Ramon. Ezekiel Lujan was named Solid Waste and Disposal Safe Operator of the Year. Juan Aaron Rodriguez as Public Works Safe Operator of the Year. And Public Utilities Safe Operator of the Year went to David Milleron. Each recipient received a certificate of appreciation and a monetary stipend of $100. In other business, a request to close 3rd Street between Allen and Bruce from 3 to 7 p.m. on December 13th was approved. The request was submitted by Crossroads Church, who will host a Christmas activity to help raise funds for the blessing boxes placed around town. Thee told the council the street closure was to allow more room for social distancing during the event. Drilling activity inching up, gas price down. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. Drilling activity in the local area in the Permian Basin to increase slowly but steadily. According to the December 7th report from Baker Hughes, there are 164 active rigs in the Permian Basin, up from 129 on October 2nd. Since that time, the Texas side is up from 85 to 105. Ward County is up by 1 with 4 active rigs. Nationally, activity has increased to 323 operational rigs, up from 266 on October 2nd. The Permian Basin accounts for 35 of the national total increase of 57. Eddy and Lee counties in New Mexico leads the basin activity with 31 and 24 respectively, outpacing the rest of the basin by far. The New Mexico side has increased by 15. On the Texas side, Midland County has the most activity with 20 operational, up from 17 in October. Reeves County has increased by 4 to 13, and Andrews County is up to 6, an increase of 4. Pecos and Winkler counties are unchanged at 3 and 1, respectively. Hector County has had no activity since mid-May. According to oilprice.com, West Texas Intermediate crude continues to be in the $40 per barrel range, with $45.72 on Monday afternoon. Since early July, prices have generally been over $40, with a high of $46.26 on December 4th. There may be some optimism for crude oil prices and activity to continue increasing. David Cutberth, Monahan's mayor and owner of Nipple Up Oil Services, said, quote, "I think we will see $50 a barrel sometime next year, but that depends a lot on COVID-19, rollout of the vaccine, and so on. I think we have done well considering what we have been through this year. At Nipple Up, we have brought a few people back. I hope it's not end-of-the-year activity, but several customers are saying they will be bringing more rigs back online next year. Fracking is also behind, and pipeline activity is still going on." End quote. In an article on Monday afternoon, Svetlana Paraskova of oilprice.com said, quote, "Oil prices are set to exceed $50 a barrel early next year, thanks to the OPEC Plus production agreements, although prices are still volatile because of the pandemic, according to the Iraqi oil minister. Quote, prices are improving, but they are still sensitive to fluctuations caused by the repercussions of coronavirus, the oil minister of OPEC's second largest producer said at an oil and gas conference in Baghdad on Sunday, as carried by Middle East Monitor. Prices for unleaded gasoline is generally down over the past month or two in most parts of the country, according to AAA. National average on Tuesday was $2.18 per gallon, down by 2.3 cents per gallon from early October. The average price in Texas has changed very little, increasing from $1.851 to $1.857. Pecos County is down by 7 cents to $2.01, and Reeves County has dropped from $2.12 to $2.03. Winkler County has the lowest price in the area with $1.96, down by 3.5 cents per gallon. Hector County dropped from $2.04 compared to $2.03 in October, while Crane County dropped from $2.01 to $1.99. Average price in Ward County is $2.01, down from $2.02.
Hello, I'm Jesse.
City budget okay despite sinking revenues. The story was written by Smokey Briggs. This year's plummeting sales tax revenues don't have Monahan City Manager Rex Thee worried yet. A majority of the city's operating budget comes in the form of sales tax collections that are paid to the state and then dolled back out to the collecting municipalities. Year to date, Monahan's checks from the state comptroller's office are off 22% compared to last year, or by a little more than $1 million. Quote, Monahan's can weather a downturn, Thee said. Over the past 3 or 4 years, the city has replaced most of its older equipment and paid off nearly all of our debt, so while we won't be spending any money that is not absolutely necessary, we don't really need to, end quote. Quote, if revenues were not down, we might replace one or two of our backhoes, and this year we will buy one new pickup for the utilities department instead of two, end quote. Thee said he carved about $1.6 million out of the 2020-2021 fiscal year budget, but most of the savings over last year came from project costs. Last year's budget included the costs of rebuilding 3 lift stations in the city's sewage system, constructing 3 new streets, and building a new detention pond. Quote, we also paid off the debt on the new water line to the well field. Simply not incurring those expenses this year got us close to a balanced budget, even with the decline in sales tax, Thee said. Currently, the city's only debt is for the compactor at the landfill, an expense that never ends, Thee said. If the compactor isn't working, we cannot take refuse at the landfill, so we replace that machinery every 5 years. It is a $460,000 machine, but the current agreement costs the city $230,000 to lease the compactor for 5 years, and the city has been doing it that way for 18 years, he said. Quote, 22% is not as bad as it could be. There are towns around West Texas that are down 30 and 40%. The numbers look a lot like 2016-2017 for us. With this budget, we are not taking any money out of savings, but we are not putting any in the bank either, end quote. Thee said the city's biggest project expense this coming year will be for road maintenance. Quote, each street needs to be seal-coated at least every 7 years. If you do not do that maintenance, then you will be borrowing millions later to rebuild those roads. So we always do the maintenance. We have $140,000 budgeted this year, and that will cover about 114 blocks, he said. Thee said the city is also working on procuring funds made available to cities through the CARES Act passed by Congress in response to the COVID-19 virus. Currently, the city has received money to cover COVID testing for Monahan citizens, money that will make up the difference between whatever a person's insurance pays and the total billing. Quote, the hospital sends us the invoice for that rather than the patient, he said. The funding is also authorized for use to pay public safety expenses, including salaries for police officers and a second animal control officer. Quote, with the downturn in oil, a lot of people left town and just turned their pets loose when they left, leaving us with a lot of stray dogs. The second officer gives Monahan's an ACO on weekends, and that has been a big help, Thieves said. Looking into the future, Thieves said there are a few project-type expenses that the city would incur. Quote, next budget we will spend $80,000 to $90,000 to dig new trenches at the landfill. We have to do that, and we are currently working on a needs assessment regarding our wastewater treatment facility, looking at what we will need when the oil field picks back up. Quote, when we were booming, our treatment facility was working at 70% capacity. By law, at 75%, you have to make a plan to expand the facility, and at 85%, you have to implement the plan. This assessment will give us an idea of what we might need to do, whether we can expand our current facility or whether we need to build a new one. That is a project that can cost anywhere from $6 to $20 million. That will probably be our next big issue. We have a good landfill and enough land around it to expand, and we have good water, but our capacity to treat wastewater might have to increase, Thee said. Eyewitnesses lead to recovery of stolen pipe. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Two Odessa men were arrested and charged with theft on November 17th after an eyewitness caught them allegedly stealing pipe from an oil company. Quote, the witnesses flagged down a Ward County Sheriff's deputy and explained they believed they saw two men stealing joints of pipe from Williams Oil Company located on Highway 1233 east of Ranchero Heights, Ward County Sheriff Frere Valle said. Deputies made contact with two suspects, identified as Ryan Joel Sanchez, age 24, and Juan Carlos Vargas, age 47, both of Odessa, who had several joints of pipe on a trailer. Quote, after further investigation, deputies learned Sanchez and Vargas did not have permission to obtain the pipe, and both were subsequently arrested, Valle said. Both men were booked into the Ward County Jail on charges of theft of property, greater than $2,500, less than $10,000, a state jail felony. Bond was set at $10,000 for both men, and they posted bond and were released. The offense can be punishable by imprisonment in a state jail facility for any term of not more than 2 years or less than 180 days, and a fine not to exceed $10,000.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.